Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. My name is Ben Riga. We're going to talk about some cool stuff this morning. As you can see, we'll be talking about all sorts of cool techniques and tips and tricks and anything related to how you can get your apps built in such a way that you can reuse as much of your code when you're building both Windows 8 and Windows Phone. Before I get started, let me introduce myself. My name is Ben Riga. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft. I'm in a group called Developer and Platform Evangelism, or DPE. I spent quite a bit of time on Windows Phone, about 3 years, and recently I've moved over to Windows 8, and so I've been thinking a lot about the overlap between Windows Phone and Windows 8, and so a lot of that learning and a lot of the things that that have been going on over the past 6 to 9 months as we've been talking about Windows 8, we're going to talk about that today. If you want to follow me after this session, or if you want to get in touch with me either via email or Twitter or Facebook or Google Plus or whatever social network you're on, you can find me on about.me/ben.riga. And so go ahead and do that. Before we actually get into it, there's some cool stuff that the Microsoft Virtual Academy are doing, and so I wanted to highlight those. The first thing is there's a lot of interesting stuff going on around getting certified, getting training for certification. There's some interesting exams and training options that the MVA has put together, and so that short URL is there. There's also the MCSD exams and training information there. And if you're looking for training directly from Training Pros, the link is there for the certified training places, including finding a class near you wherever you might be in the world. You can see we're actually on the Microsoft Virtual Academy site today. There's a lot of interesting training that goes on this site. And so if this is your first time here, you'll want to join and take advantage of all this free online training. There is already over 1 million registered users. And if you want to stay up to date with all of the stuff that's going on at Microsoft training, whether it's server, client, phone, or any of that stuff, you can do that. And you can earn points for each of the events that you attend. In fact, you will get 50 MVA points for this event. In order to do that, the short URL is there. It's aka.ms/MVA voucher, and use the both W8 and WP8JS coupon code. That does expire, so please go ahead and do that. Now, as I said, my name is Ben Riga, but there's a bunch of people behind the scenes that are helping me, as there are a lot more people on this event than I had expected, which is a great thing. But I needed some help to handle all the Q&A, and so some of the folks on my team, team leader Drew Robbins, as well as a smart guy named Jaime Rodriguez, and one of the new members on our team, Nisha Singh, they'll be behind the scenes answering all your Q&A. So if you ask questions in the chat window and they magically get answered, it's probably one of them that's doing it. And also, there's a couple of people that helped out with this content that were not able to attend this event, Andrew Byrne and Matthias Shapiro, that helped review content and so on. And so they're actually pretty smart in this area. And so they might be good people that you might want to follow on Twitter. So who are we looking for? Who are we trying to help with this content? Obviously, it's developer-related content, but the developers I think that'll get the most benefit from this content is developers that are perhaps already Windows Phone developers. And so perhaps you already have an app in the Windows Phone marketplace, and you're thinking about, or perhaps have already started moving that Windows Phone 7 app to Windows Phone 8. And so what we'd like to do is make it easier for you to develop for Windows Phone 8 and at the same time develop your Windows 8 app and get that out there. And obviously, as part of doing that, that expands the reach that your app would have by obviously addressing those two different markets with hopefully a lot of the same code. So what should you expect from this session? It is a four-hour session, and I'll talk about what's in that. After you leave this session, you should have a really good understanding of the similarities and differences between Windows 8 and Windows Phone, and specifically Windows Phone 8. And you should have a really good understanding of all the tips and tricks and techniques and patterns and all of that good stuff related to how you can build for both Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8, as well as you're doing that, maximize the amount of code that you reuse when you're doing that. The presentation doesn't really cover how to start building a Windows Phone app or how to build a Windows 8 app. There's lots of really good content, including on the MVA site. There's lots of really good content of how to learn how to begin development for Windows Phone or for Windows 8. That's not what we're going to do today. We're kind of assuming that you have a pretty good grounding in Windows Phone and hopefully Windows 8 development as well. And what we're going to try and do is help you merge the two or bridge the two together. There is also no way for you to build an app that runs on both Windows Phone and Windows 8. That is not a concept, and so hopefully you're not expecting to do that. It's just not possible at this point. So why are we doing this? Obviously, Windows Phone and Windows, hopefully by the end of this session, you'll see that they're sort of on this convergence path. There's lots of really good stuff that the Windows Phone team had done, and then the Windows 8 team is sort of jumped over that and gone way beyond, and at the same time the Windows Phone team have taken as much of that as they possibly could into Windows Phone 8. And ultimately what that means is that we're on this sort of path to Windows Phone and Windows 8 converging. Now they're not there yet, obviously. They are still two different platforms, two very different platforms, but there are a lot of similarities, and that's what we're going to focus on today. You may have already seen this sort of high-level architecture slide of what the Windows 8 platform is. Obviously, there is the desktop apps that you may have been building in the past, whether it's C Sharp or C++ or so on. We're obviously going to focus on Windows Store apps. That's where we're focusing a lot of our energies there, obviously. And actually, we're also going to be very focused on the XAML part of Windows Store. And in fact, we'll be spending all of our time using C Sharp, because that is an easy overlap between Windows Phone and Windows 8. Specifically, there are some parts of the Windows Runtime APIs, the WinRT APIs, and so there are quite a few different APIs, and so we'll talk about all of the various areas. Obviously, in 4 hours, we can't cover everything in detail, but like I said, by the time you leave, you'll have a really good idea of the similarities and differences between those two. When you think about Windows Phone, or specifically Windows Phone 7, and like I said, I'm hoping that many of you have already built Windows Phone 7 apps. In the past, that was all about .NET, C#, VB, C# or VB. When we moved to Windows Phone 8, obviously there was a runtime as well that we've now added, which can be used from either C# VB, and with Windows Phone 8 we've added C++ as well. And finally, if you are especially if you need to talk directly to the metal, things like Direct3D, X-Audio, all of that good stuff, you can actually do that, obviously, but you would do that with C++. What we're going to focus on today is really the C#. Now, the Windows Phone APIs, there's all sorts of other APIs that are over and above the Windows Runtime APIs, and of course, you can still continue to use those, but those don't help you when you're trying to bridge the two different platforms. So what we're going to focus on is where the two platforms intersect. And this is sort of a general sort of high-level view. As you can imagine, the Windows runtime is quite large, and the Windows Phone runtime is also quite large and has some things over and above what the Windows 8 runtime has. But there are certain areas where, if you're very careful, you can actually build your code in such a way that you can actually reuse it across both those platforms. So let's talk about what we're going to talk about over the next 4 hours. I've split the session into four areas. The first one, we'll talk about the similarities and differences between Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8, sort of comparing and contrasting the two. We'll talk about the UI, we'll talk about data models and so on. And then there's some things that, you probably should know. Many of you may already be using MVVM, but I do know that there are many that still are not using MVVM. And so I wanted to dive in and, look at some of the things that you need to do to move your apps from non-MVVM to MVVM. And the reason for that is by using a pattern like MVVM, and for those of you that don't know what MVVM is, we'll go into that in a lot of detail later on. But it is a really good pattern for code reusability. And basically what it means is you'd be separating the concerns. You'd be separating your data from your view model, from your view or what your UI is. And then finally, when we have that that good base between the similarities and differences and, these this pattern of MVVM, then we'll talk about some very specific techniques that you can use to maximize that code reuse. Let's look at those things in a little bit more detail. As I said, when you think about Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, there are some things that you'll be thinking about. The first one, it's sort of optically, the first thing you think about is the UI. Visually, Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 look very similar. And so you want to think about that. And we'll talk about what the differences are there. There's also under the covers, you're probably, unless it's a very trivial app, you're probably using data of some sort. And data is probably one of the easiest things that you can reuse across both Windows Phone and Windows 8. And so we'll talk about some of those things. And then finally, we'll get into some of the platform-specific features, that are across both platforms and that sort of at first glance you would think would be portable or reusable. But when you get into it, maybe is a little bit more difficult. We'll talk about all of those things later on. As I said, the basics of MVVM rely on the VM part, the view model part. And so we'll talk about what that means. And we'll dive into data binding. Maybe you're already using data binding. We'll talk about what's going on under the hood and why data binding actually works. And it is sort of the linchpin or the thing that that sort of makes MVVM pretty cool, I think. When we talk about MVVM itself, we'll get into an introduction of what that means, the model view, view model. We'll talk about the architecture, the pros and cons, and then we'll talk about how, by using MVVM, you can reuse a lot of your code. And then finally, we'll touch briefly on some of the third-party libraries that are already out there that help you over and above the sort of basics that you can do on your own. And then, as I said, once we have that base, we'll talk about how to share code. And there we'll talk about things like portable class libraries, sharing source code between projects and solutions, inheritance, conditional compilation, and then finally partial classes and methods. With that, I think we should just dive in. The first step, as I said, is we were going to talk about comparing Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. And so that's our first stop in this journey. We've already seen the agenda, so let's just jump right in. The first thing when you think about Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 is the UI. As I said, they do look very different. Windows Phone with the live tiles and Windows 8 with their live tile with its live tiles, they're actually very similar. And so you would expect that some of that sort of transfers over. And obviously, there is a lot of inspiration and innovation going on between the two teams. You see one team building on the other, and then the other one leapfrogging, and so on. But there are some very dramatic differences that you have to keep in mind. Windows Phone 8 really comes in three different form factors, 800 by 480, 1280 by 720, and 1280 by 768. And Windows 8 comes in many, many, many form factors. Basically, it's 1024 by 768 as a minimum, but then there really is no maximum. You can go to all sorts of different wild and wonderful screen sizes and so on, including multiple screens and all of that good stuff. When you think of Windows Phone, you can use a Windows Phone in portrait and landscape, but for the most part, most of the apps and the device itself is sort of built to be used in a portrait form. It's not a requirement. Obviously, many apps do use the landscape form factor, but for all intents and purposes, you're using your thumb to scroll and so on. And so the portrait is sort of the predominant one. And obviously, the screen sizes for Windows Phone are going to be much smaller. It's got to fit in your pocket. And so screen sizes, I think the largest screen size right now is 4.7 or 4.8 inches. Windows 8, a little different there. It is designed to be used in a landscape form. The tiles, for instance, on the on the start screen actually scroll horizontally. A lot of the content when you're scrolling it is scrolling horizontally, and so it's a different feel, and it's built differently from that perspective. There are also other types of form factors that you can't that you have to think about in Windows 8. You can look at Windows 8 in a portrait. If you turn your slate, for instance, it should snap into a portrait form. And then there's also the snap view, the smaller screen along the left-hand side, and then the filled view, which is the remainder of the screen when you are using that snap view. And as I said earlier, there's lots of different screen sizes. Pretty much you start at 10 inches and go up to, you know, I've seen 80 inches and higher. So with that in mind, there are some user experience considerations that you have to keep in mind. You, of course, are trying to design a native UX for that platform. It should feel like a native UX. And so you want to keep that in that what's native for that platform in mind as you're doing that. The first thing is Windows Phone, as I said, is portrait. It's really designed to be used in a one-handed way with one-handed touch. You know, you pull your phone out of your pocket and you're scrolling and typing and so on one-handed. Windows 8 as a tablet is meant to be held with two hands. It can be used with one hand, of course, but can also be used with a mouse and with ink and other things. So you have to keep those in mind. Windows Phone 8 has some very specific requirements that the OEMs have to fulfill if they build a Windows Phone 8 device. And so you're, as a developer, you're guaranteed to have specific hardware, things like camera and accelerometer, sort of, you know they'll be there. There is no guarantee of specific hardware in a Windows 8 device. There are certain things that, of course, you can rely on, but you really have to check at runtime whether that specific feature you need is actually available on the device that the end user has installed your app on. On Windows Phone, because of the form factor, you tend to avoid multiple columns of data. It's not a requirement, but it's kind of hard to do on smaller screens. And in Windows 8, you're almost guaranteed to have lots of columns just because the screens are big and you want to organize the data in that way. I mentioned this earlier. Windows Phone is really meant, in many cases, you're scrolling up and down for more content. And Windows 8, you're scrolling left to right. Windows Phone 8, there's very limited room for the OS to do menuing or choosing of options. And so the app bar tends to be very small. There's only four items. And so you have very limited room on there. Windows 8, there's significantly more room. In fact, you have two app bars. You can have a bottom and a top app bar. And within that, there's a lot of room to put any sort of containers with commanding and so on. On Windows Phone, you are guaranteed to have a back button. There is a hardware back button on every Windows Phone device. There is no hardware back button on Windows 8, but there is an on-screen back button that you have to be aware of. Windows 8 also has a concept of semantic zoom. It's a key part of the experience, and Windows Phone 8 doesn't have anything like that. And so you have to keep that in mind. So with that, if you keep that in mind, you think about the things like form factor and the user experience consideration, the advice that I would give you is don't try and reuse your XAML across Windows Phone and Windows 8. Of course, it still is XAML, and you can reuse all of your skills, and you may even be able to reuse some controls and so on. But for the most part, you really want to design your apps with different views, with different designs, with different user experiences, whether you're doing a small screen or a large screen. And that's related to a few things. Some of the things that we talked about, the experience, the screen space, the page layout and the orientation, the stuff we just talked about, but also things like the XAML namespaces and XAML controls. And by that, let's talk about that. So there are obviously a huge overlap between controls and the two platforms, and yet the namespaces between them are not always the same. In fact, many times they're not. And so you have to, as you're building your XAML views, it just becomes very hard and very cumbersome when you're changing namespaces and so on. It just becomes a bit of a chore and a kind of a nightmare when you're doing that. Many controls are present on both platforms, but they're, as I said, in different namespaces. And so things like the windows.ui.xaml.controls.canvas versus system.windows.control.canvas on Windows Phone 8. And then, of course, there are some controls that are just not supported on the other platforms. So the pivot is a perfect example of that. It's a control that was designed specifically for Windows Phone, and so the Windows 8 team chose not to implement that, and it probably didn't make sense to implement that on Windows 8, and so if you try to use that, you'll have some issues. There is a much more detailed comparison of the controls between Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 that the Windows Phone team, documentation team, put together. The URL is down at the bottom of the screen there. Don't try and grab it now. Actually, at the end of this event, I have a list of all the resources that are available in one place, so you can go and grab it all at the same time, and we'll talk about that later. As I said, each platform has its own set of XAML controls. There is some, but not much, overlap between the two. Some controls are available on both platforms, but they don't overlap. And just some examples, for instance, things like Windows Phone uses the phone application page as the root page element, and Windows 8, its page as the root page element. Windows Phone 8, you use the long list selector to show vertical scrolling of content. On Windows 8, you use the list view to scroll, and it actually scrolls vertically or horizontally as well. You also have the pivot control for paging content horizontally or for tabbing of content. In Windows 8, you have the flip view for paging of content horizontally. Windows Phone 8 has the application bar control. Windows 8 has the app bar control. And then Windows 8 also has a grid view to group content in a grid on the display in the layout. So if you look at Windows 8 controls, most of the templates that that you start with in Windows 8 in Visual Studio start off with a layout aware page that then gives you things like a grid view. Then you can add an app bar, the list view control, the flip view control. These are all standard controls that are optimized for the Windows 8 platform. And then in many cases, in all cases, these controls are just not available on Windows Phone. And so if you're building on that, if you're trying to build with controls that are available on both, you're building to a very limited set of controls, in fact. This is just an example of Windows Phone controls here, where you have two pages. You have two pivot pages on a pivot control. There's the long list selector with the content that's scrolling vertically, and then you have the application bar control. Again, these controls are optimized for Windows Phone, and so you should focus your efforts on optimizing your user experience for that platform. So we've talked about the user experience, or the UI of the experience, and as I said, you're probably not going to gain a lot of reuse on the UI, and for most purposes, you probably don't want to try and reuse that. On the opposite end of the spectrum is the data model. That's where your data is stored. And there, you can actually benefit greatly by reusing code whenever you can. And so let's talk about what that means. First of all, I certainly encourage you, if you're not already doing that, to sort of group all of your data together in a data model, or your data access into a data model, so that it makes it easier to understand your code, to structure your code. It makes it more modular, makes it easier to debug and to test. And it makes it easier to find what you're looking for when you're looking for it. The most important part from our perspective today for this course is that by putting your data into a data model, it makes it more portable across Windows Phone and Windows 8, because you can leverage the APIs that are portable between those two and do it in one area, and then port that between Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. And we'll talk about how you do that later. But right now I want to talk about storage in general. So Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 both support storage of key value pairs, settings, files, and folders, and so on. All of that storage is isolated, so any app, whether it's on Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8, cannot see any other app on that platform, on that PC. And that's just for security and for isolation purposes and so on. Windows Phone 8 also supports SQL CE. It's standard and to the platform. Windows 8 does not have a built-in Microsoft SQL database. On the other hand, there are readily available SQLite libraries that you can go and download and take advantage of, and many developers are doing that. There are shared APIs in the Windows.storage namespace, and so by taking advantage of those, you can actually manage local app storage in a way that is portable between Windows Phone and Windows 8. And here you're using a lot of the async and await capabilities that were introduced with Windows 8. The Windows Phone APIs are a subset of the full APIs, and so not all of the Windows 8 Windows.storage namespace, for instance, not all of those APIs are available. For instance, there is no roaming of data store, temporary data store, local settings, and roaming of settings. All of that stuff is not available to you on Windows Phone. And so we wanted to talk about what is available and what are some of the things that you can take advantage of. As I said, the Windows.storage, when you're for the purposes of local app file storage, both Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8 support that namespace and some of the things that are in there. We'll talk about what that means in a second, and we'll get to a demo, and I'll show you how we do that. There is system.io isolated storage and isolated storage file. This is something that you have on Windows Phone 8. And you can use that. You can continue to use that in Windows Phone 8 and Windows Phone 7 for that matter. But my recommendation to you is start moving to Windows.storage. We haven't deprecated system.io or anything like that, but you would imagine that over time we will put more of our efforts into Windows.storage, and it obviously behooves you to take advantage of that because it is portable between those two platforms. And so if you start moving over there, the sooner you start moving over there, the better it is for your app. And then when you're storing your application data settings, you would use application data, also in Windows.storage, but it is available only on Windows 8. And that's, again, just standard key value storage where you would use that for your settings, both local settings or roaming of settings. And then in Windows Phone, the way to do that is system.io.isolated storage. Unfortunately, that is not portable and so on. And then, as I mentioned earlier, there is no SQL database. There is SQL CE on Windows Phone 8. That's standard part of the platform. Windows 8 does not include that, but you do have access via open the SQLite libraries, as I mentioned. It's a Bing search away to grab that. So I've been talking for quite a while. Let's stop for a second and take a look at a demo. And so let me see here. Let me just move over to Visual Studio. So I have I'm going to be using two apps today for demos, two, maybe three actually. The first one is the Contoso Cookbook. It's, if you've done any Windows 8, any of the Windows 8 hands-on labs, it's used throughout. It's a really great sample, and I certainly encourage you to spend some time with it. And also with Windows Phone 8, there was a hands-on lab that was built with the Contoso Cookbook, and so that app was actually ported to Windows Phone 8. And so it's a really good example of how to do things on Windows 8 and then how to take that to Windows Phone 8. And so it gives you something you can compare and contrast. And then later on, I'll use another app that was developed. You may have seen it. It's called PixPresenter Photo Manager. And so we'll look at that one later when we get into the code reuse. That one was actually built to show off code reuse between the two platforms, and so we'll take advantage of that. And both of those are available on the internet. Again, I'll give you a list of all of the various resources that I'm using today, including MSDN pages that are useful and so on. Okay, so let's actually stop talking and start looking at some code. So I've actually opened up, you can see here I have the Contoso Cookbook Windows 8 version. And so in this case, let me go over to Common. And in the Common folder, there is something called Suspension Manager. Oh, I had it open already. And so I'm going to go over to the Save Async. And so I'm using this not so much because we're talking about suspending and so on. or lifecycle management of apps. What I'm using it for is just to give you a sense of how you would do things like storing of files and so on. We will talk about lifecycle in a few minutes, though. So here I'm using Save Async, and if we look here, you can see how, hopefully you guys can see this, how I'm serializing the session state here asynchronously using memory stream. You can see here I'm newing up a new memory stream, and then I'm using the data contract serializer, which takes that dictionary and serializes it into a XML form. And so here's my serializer, which I'm writing to this memory stream. And now once I have this memory stream, here's the guts of it. Here is the storage file I'm newing up. And here I'm actually creating file async. And once I've done that, I can use my file stream to then, where is it? Here, copy to async. So I'm just using the standard Windows.storage APIs to take advantage. I'm taking advantage of those to actually very quickly and easily move my data, my session data in this case, from memory into to my local storage. And then finally, I do a flush async. And then when I want to bring it back, it's there's the restore async method here, which essentially does the same thing in reverse, where I now open up my session state file name, and that file name is just the standard, underscore session state dot XML. And so there I'm opening up my file, and then using my stream, I'm opening up the stream and then deserializing it again using the data contract serializer, and then from that I have my session state, and then I'm registering frames and so on and bringing them back to their save state. This is the way we do it in Windows 8. This same code would run pretty much the same way in Windows Phone 8. Now, of course, you wouldn't be doing this sort of suspension management in Windows Phone 8 because the suspension management is different. But for the purposes of reading and writing to files, the code is pretty much the same. And so as a result, it's perfectly portable between the two platforms, and you should take advantage of that. So if you are still using the Windows Phone isolated storage APIs, I would encourage you to start thinking about moving to the Windows.storage APIs. All right, let's head back to PowerPoint. How are we doing on questions, Frank? Are we doing good? Are there a lot of people online? Frank's not listening. Not seeing any questions. No? Okay, let's just keep going. Okay, so you are using Windows.storage, as I mentioned, and so if you are using Windows.storage, then that is portable between two platforms, and as a result, there are certain things that you can take advantage of. We're going to go into these in a lot more detail in the final session of the course today, but things like portable libraries, portable class libraries, that is, sharing of source code between projects and solutions, inheritance, software patterns, like I talked about earlier, NVVM. We'll go into that in a lot more detail earlier. And then I would say almost as a last resort, conditional blocks. Well, we'll talk about all those in a sense later. Your data model and hopefully, for the most part, your business logic should be largely reusable among your two platforms if you take advantage of the right APIs. The way you do that is using portable class libraries is probably the first technique that you would use. There, I should mention, though, that portable class libraries is only available in non-Express versions of Visual Studio. So if you're using Visual Studio Express for Windows or Visual Studio Express for Windows Phone, those editions don't include portable class library. That template is just not available to you, unfortunately. I apologize for that. It's just the way it is at this point. And what Portable Class Libraries does is it limits your APIs in that library to the APIs that are common across the various platforms that you choose. In our case, we'll choose Windows Phone and Windows 8. And so the Portable Class Library will actually limit you to the APIs that are available to both of those. That Portable Class Library is then compiled to a DLL that can be referenced by either a Windows 8 project or a Windows Phone 8 project, and it's used as is. And of course, as a result, it is only managed code. There are patterns. Again, we'll talk about these in a lot more detail later. NVVM is probably the best one for the purpose of Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. It's similar to MVP and MVC, but takes advantage of data binding. And again, we'll talk more about this later. And we'll talk about what you need to do that. Again, it is an architectural pattern. There's three parts to it. There's the data model, which we talked about a few minutes ago. There's the view, which is the UI, which we talked about earlier as well. And then there's the view model, which is sort of the, I guess, the secret sauce, if you want to call it that, that gives you that handles all of that interaction of the UI and moving of data back and forth from the data model to the UI or to the view. The model handles the data. The view model handles the logic, either displaying that data or converting that data into the view, into a way that the view can use it. And then the view obviously handles the UI. And what you're trying to do is eliminate or minimize the amount of code that you have in your views. If you move your code into view models or into the data model, then that makes your code much more usable. Again, as I mentioned, your views are the thing that you're going to have the most trouble reusing. And so if you can move your code into view models or data models, you'll be farther along in being able to make your code reusable. Okay. We're going to go into a lot more detail around MVVM in particular. We'll give you a good grounding, a good introduction to MVVM in a few minutes. And then at the end, we'll also talk about the sharing techniques, portable class libraries and sharing and inheritance and all that good stuff at the end of the session. Before I got into that, I did want to talk about some of the platform-specific features, because if you look at it, again, visually or optically, when you think about some of these things, both of the platforms do them, and so you may think that, well, if I have an application application lifecycle management that's happening on Windows Phone and Windows 8, then I would expect that they're both the same. In fact, these things are quite different, and so we're going to talk about the similarities as well as differences between them. In many cases, you're going to have to avoid reusing code here because the features are very different. So you'll have to separate that code into platform-specific files or platform-specific code. Again, we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. The first area I wanted to talk about was the application lifecycle. And so part of the responsibility of the operating system is to manage that. It does manage things like the CPU, memory, network, battery, all of that good stuff. And in order to do that, Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 have a very specific life cycle that they've imposed on apps that are built for the platforms. And they do that in order to maximize the experience of the end user, so the end user is not regretting installing apps and not confused by app performance because something is going on in the background that maybe they don't know what's going on. And also to maximize the device experience as well, things like battery and CPU. And all of that stuff is optimized using the application state and the state lifecycle management. And we'll talk about some of that and how that works. The OS determines what's going on based on how much memory and how much resources it has. And so things like if the operating system detects that it's starting to run out of memory, it will start terminating apps that have been pushed into the back stack, into the background, or have been suspended. So what does that mean? Well, at the very simplest, it means that only foreground apps execute code. Apps in the background are not running. They're not executing code. They are not taking CPU. They're not taking a disk. They're not doing anything, right? There are exceptions to that, of course. There are certain scenarios where it does make sense for the code to be running in the background. Typical example is if I'm doing a file transfer and I want that to happen in the background because I need to retrieve files. Or perhaps an even better example would be the idea of perhaps having music running in the background. Obviously, I'm going to want my music running in the background while I'm doing email or something else, browsing the web, that sort of thing. Now, if the operating system is managing the state and managing what's going on in memory, then your apps will lose unsaved data if the operating system terminates that. And so the way that you manage that is that the operating system actually gives you clues as to what's going on, and it manages that by triggering certain events in your app that you can then use to take advantage of and save your state before you get suspended and obviously before you get terminated. Windows Phone and Windows 8 are quite different in this respect. Windows Phone starts when an app starts, it gets a launching event. And then when it gets pushed into the background, it goes into a dormant state. It triggers a deactivating event. And then it becomes dormant. If you then bring it back, it uses the activating event to do that so that you can do whatever needs to be done to bring your app back to life. If the operating system detects that it's out of memory, the app is tombstoned. There is no event. You don't see that. And so you have to use the deactivating event to save your state at all times. And then even when your app is tombstoned, you might get an activating event saying you're coming back from a tombstoned event. Or the app may just be closed and go into a non-running state. On Windows 8, it's a little bit different, and I would say it's a little bit simpler, and probably, I would say, even a little bit easier. There is no tombstoned state in Windows 8. You start off from you go from non-running to running. You get the activating event to tell you about that. When your app gets pushed into the background, you get a suspending event. When you come back from the background, you get a resuming event. And when your app is terminated, you get a terminating event. So both platforms, only the foreground app can consume CPU resources. And again, I mentioned earlier, there are some exceptions to that. You can do background tasks. We'll talk about how that works in a few minutes. It is different between Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, so you have to keep that in mind as well. So other apps are suspended or deactivated when your app is in the foreground. So they are still in memory so that they can be brought back and sort of rehydrated very quickly. But when you are suspended or deactivated, your background, your app just stops doing that. So you have to, it stops running. And so you have to save your state. And both platforms give the app a certain amount of time from when they get suspended to when they, from when they begin getting suspended, when they get that event of suspending or deactivating, in order to save state. It's a few seconds, more than enough to save your state in local storage, and then you're put into that suspended or dormant state. So in terms of the application life cycle, there are certain events that you have to keep in mind. In Windows Phone 8, they are all derived from the system.window.application. You get the application launching, application activated, application deactivated, and application closing. Those are the ones you have to keep in mind when you're thinking about that. And then on Windows 8, it's in the windows.ui.xaml.application namespace, and there it's on launched and on suspending. Those are the two that you have to keep in mind when you're doing that. So rather than talk about it and describe it, it's probably a lot easier if I just show you. And so let me switch back to my app. Again, I'm going to use the Contoso cookbook app. And so let me come back to my Windows 8. And I'm going to go into app.xaml, and this is my application-specific stuff. And so I am going to put breakpoints on a few areas. So I'm going to go to on launched, and I'll put a breakpoint there. I'll go to on suspending. I'll put a breakpoint there. What's going on in there is not really important at this point. Obviously, you do want to handle that. But I really sort of focused on what are the events that are going to trigger your app to do stuff. And there is another event that you should think about. And these are things, again, they're kind of beyond the scope of this course, but things like some of the search charms that may actually trigger your app to get started, things like search or share and that sort of thing. When you use search here, I'm going to put a breakpoint on search activated. And so now that I have that, I'm actually going to run the app. And so that should get started. And you'll see that moving quickly. And you'll see it's paused there. And the reason it's paused, if I come back to, there it is. So here's my on launched event. I'm at the breakpoint. So you see my app launched, and the on launched method was triggered. And so if I continue, and there's my app. This is the standard cookbook app that's running there. If I now exit that, I'm just going to grab that and exit. And I'll just pause for a second because it takes a few seconds for the app to actually exit out. And once that happens, there it is. So there's my on suspending event that was triggered. So this is what I would see when an app gets terminated or when it gets suspended. Now, if I run this again, you'll see it's restarting. And there it's triggered again. By the way, if I look at the arguments, for instance, you can see things like previous execution state. So you can see what's going on behind the scenes and why you're getting that on launched event. In this case, the app was closed by the user. That's what I did earlier. I closed it and then I relaunched it. So I can handle all of that. Let me just continue here. And now the app is running. I'll hit the start button to come back to my start screen. And now rather than go back to it, what I'll do is search. And I'll just use my mouse here to search. And let me search for, I don't know, sugar is a good ingredient in cooking. And if I click on Contoso Cookbook, you'll see that as soon as I clicked on Contoso Cookbook, Contoso Cookbook was actually launched, and as part of that launch, the on search activated event was triggered. And so there are certain lifecycle events that you have to manage, and that's one of them. Okay, so that gives you a sense of what the lifecycle management looks like in Windows 8. Let me turn off all of those, delete all those breakpoints. And now let's have a look at the same app, although this time we're looking at Contoso Cookbook on Windows Phone 8. And again, I'm going to look at the app.xaml page. I think I have it up here already. And there's a few. Here we go. So I'm going to put a breakpoint on launching, activated, deactivated, and closing. And so if I run that, let me bring my handy-dandy Windows Phone emulator that's running. It's deploying it. And so here is my app that's starting. It's loading. And in a second, you should see in the background that the launching event should trigger a breakpoint. And there it is. So there's my application. You can see it in the background there. My application launching event has been triggered. If I continue. So my app is now running. This is my cool cookbook app. The same content, and the app is now rebuilt for Windows Phone 8. That's great. But now if I hit the start button, when I hit the start button, the app will be pushed into the background. And so immediately the application deactivated event is triggered. Which is great. I'm going to continue. So now the app is in the background. We did the deactivated, and we are saving some of that stuff in the background. Now, if I hit the back button, I'm at the start screen, deactivate. If I hit the back button from here, I'm going to restart that app again. And so again, I'm getting the application activated event, and we can look at the arguments and so on. In this case, you can see that the application instance is preserved. That means it was still in memory, hadn't been terminated yet, which is pretty obvious. There was nothing else running, and so there's plenty of memory for it. Let me continue here. And now the app is running again. Now the app, rather than hit the start button at this point, I'm actually going to hit the back button, which means I'm going to exit out of the app rather than push it into the background. And so I should get a different trigger. And there it is. There's my application closing event if you can see that there. My application closing event is triggered because now I'm actually exiting out. And of course, I have all my arguments there if I need them. So that sort of gives you an idea. Again, let me just turn off all of these breakpoints so I don't see them later. That gives you an idea of where we are with application lifecycle. Now, rather than continue on, I think we have about a minute before the next break. So I think I'm going to stop there. Frank, does that sound all right?
Yeah.
I think this is a good place to stop. We're going to continue back. When we come back, we'll look at system tasks and contracts and that sort of thing. We'll take a 10-minute break, and we'll get started again right around, what time, Frank, around 9 or so?
In 10 minutes.
We're going to start in 10 minutes from now. So go and get your preferred hot beverage, and we'll be back soon.